Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all.
Welcome to our 319th program of Think Again. As usual, we're broadcasting from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Think Again is a program of Borderlands Cooperative, an organisation working for social change since 1997. I'm Jennifer Burrell, your host today, and I have with me in the studio Philip Ripper, who is Chief Executive of the organisation No to Violence. We're going to talk about the national plan to end violence against women and children, how it's going or not going, and what needs to be done about it. Welcome to the program, Philip Ripper.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's great to be here.
Great pleasure to have you here. And I think it's a really important topic we're talking about today that doesn't get half enough coverage. So to begin with, can you tell us a bit about No to Violence, your organisation, and also about your own story and what motivated you to become executive officer of NTV?
Yes, No to Violence is a bit like 3CR itself. It started as a community movement. A number of men in Melbourne, Victoria, getting together to say we need to do something to end men's use of family violence. And this is 40 years ago. Radical men saying someone needs to step up and do something. They got themselves together and established a voluntary telephone counselling service, and the Red Cross down in South Melbourne, they donated some rooms, and the service ran out of there for a number of years. And the focus on addressing family violence at the source, i.e. addressing men's use of family violence, really resonated with a lot of men and a lot of people who were working in the family violence sector, saying we won't stop family violence until we stop men using family violence. And that led to a lot of growth and development of No to Violence, has gone through many iterations and been somewhat of an industry body, and created minimum standards for men's behaviour change work and practice guidance, and facilitated communities of practice, and really led the development of men's behaviour change programs in Victoria and then right across Australia. So today, 40 years later, we are a national peak body of organisations and individuals committed to ending men's use of family violence. So bringing together practitioners, service providers, and anyone with an interest in addressing family violence at the source. We run the 24/7 telephone counselling service, the men's referral service. We've been operating that service, as I said, from 40 years ago as a voluntary service, a couple of nights a week, to now 24/7 right across Australia. And we are that point where men who are concerned about their behaviour, who are looking to do different, can pick up the phone, talk to a telephone counsellor 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and get on a pathway of change. But we also have a key role in leading advocacy and national advocacy efforts and state-based advocacy efforts to really focus on the source of the problem. And we conduct research and training and development, and more recently working with the corporate sector to support their capacity and capability in addressing family violence in their organisations and across the community.
It really centres men's responsibility, doesn't it, in its advocacy, in policy advocacy, in the work that you do, and in your helpline. Yeah,
that's absolutely right. The family violence sector has been led out of a really powerful and strong feminist movement, setting up the first women's shelter in a squat in Sydney 50 years ago, Elsie's Place, the women and victim survivors of family violence and activists have led the family violence movement, and that work is vital to support victim survivors to escape violence, to repair, to recover, to heal. But note of violence sits alongside that response sector, and it really focuses on the perpetrators. It focuses on people who use violence, because we know so many men will go on from one relationship where they use violence onto the next and the next and the next. And there's, you know, there's while every victim survivor deserves and needs support to end family violence, you have to deal with the men who are using family violence. It's not inevitable. We shouldn't be, you know, for too long in this country, I think policymakers and the community have sort of taken for granted that men will just be violent, men will use violence, and we, women and children, others across the community just need to accept that men will always use family violence and there's nothing we can do about it. So we need to just respond and respond and respond. And that's just not true. Family violence is a choice. Men choose to use family violence and they can choose different. And until we focus on men and the society and the community and the culture and the systems that enable and facilitate and support men to use family violence, we're going to be fighting a never-ending battle. So, you know, we need to add another focus to our work, not just working with victims and survivors to keep them safe, but to address the problem at the source. And that's the whole point of no to violence.
Yeah, and I know in the past, probably a long time ago now, people used to talk about anger management, but I know no to violence's argument would be it's not to do with being angry, it's to do with controlling your behaviour. You know, we all get angry, but we all don't lash out. Yeah.
Exactly right. You know, that's a lot of men will make excuses for their own behaviour. You know, we often hear on our telephone lines and, you know, you just need to talk to men who use family violence and, you know, the "she made me do it" line.
I got angry so I had to.
Yeah, it's like they had no control. And really, it's such a light bulb moment when men can see that they actually do have choices. These are choices. They don't choose to be violent at work when someone annoys them. They can manage their behaviour there. These are choices and they're about power and they're about control, largely in many cases. And men who feel helpless and like they lose control, you know, often have a light bulb moment when they realise, actually, I am in control of my choices, my behaviour, and I can choose different. And that's a pathway to healing when men take responsibility for their own behaviour, their own choices and their own actions and the consequences of it.
So I think in describing No to Violence's work, you've also pretty much described your motivation being the executive officer. So thank you for that, unless you wanted to add anything else about yourself.
Oh, no, not particularly. I mean,
you don't want to talk about yourself. Oh,
look, you know, it's one of my favourite topics, talking about myself. Okay. No, but I mean, I do think it is interesting as a man and someone who identifies as a man, as being socialised a man, and to be leading an organisation in the family violence space. It is distressing to find myself going to meeting after meeting after meeting, and often being the only man in the room. What I see every day in this country is women shouldering the burden created by men and their use of violence, and men nowhere in the picture to be seen.
Yes. And
so, you know, I sit at the absolute pinnacle of privilege in this country. You know, I'm white, middle class, middle aged, male, no visible signs of disability. I sit in the most rarefied of privileged places on the planet. And, you know, when I look around the sector, I don't see enough people of privilege using that privilege to make a difference.
And so women shouldn't be doing all the work. And it's always a little bit painful too when you see people who have survivors or victims of any sort of violence being the ones doing all the advocacy and campaigning and the ones trotted out by the media and telling their stories, which is a reason some organisations just say, no, we're not facilitating people's personal stories in the media, even though it helps publicise it. But why are they doing all that heavy lifting?
Yes, yeah.
So, Philip, I should get on to our topic for today.
Yes.
Well, that is our topic, but our central topic is the National Plan to End Violence Against Women and Children. So what is the National Plan to End Violence Against Women and Children, and what's its strategy? Please explain.
Yeah.
And how's it going?
Well, look, there's a lot in that, and there are probably people doing PhDs on the topic at the moment. But look, the National Plan has a long history. I think our current minister, Tanya Plibersek, is credited with pioneering work 17 years ago in developing Australia's first National Plan to end family violence, or gender-based violence, I think it was at the time. So it has a long history. And the current plan extends to 2032, and it's a 10-year plan as such. And as part of that plan, there are rolling action plans. Mm-hmm. So the next one is due next year. So all eyes at the moment are on what's the process and what does the next sort of action plan under the broader national strategy look like.
And I'd like just to take a step back too about how it's going. So I understand violence against women has actually increased under the plan. I think the formal plan, current one, started about 2011. Would that be right?
2022 is the current one.
No, yep. but the beginning of the first one.
Yes. Yep.
So it's been there quite a while.
Yep.
A lot of investment and fanfare, and apparently violence against women has increased. And
yes.
I looked at Safe and Equal's website just to look at a few facts too, and almost one woman in Australia is killed every week in family violence or intimate partner violence situation. So apparently it's not working. It's getting worse.
Yes. All indications say that family violence in this country is getting worse year on year. I don't think there's an indicator going backwards, even population adjusted. And that figure that people talk about, a woman murdered by a current or former partner every week, I think it's more like every 4 or 5 days now. You know, whilst that is the absolute tip of the iceberg, in Queensland, the police would say, and the government say, that they respond to 220,000 call-outs a year in police. Now, in New South Wales, I think the figure is every 4 minutes there's a police call-out. In Victoria, we topped over 100,000 call-outs last year by police. So this is more than 50% of our frontline policing is dedicated to family violence. Now, if you think of the hundreds and billions of dollars invested in frontline policing every year across this country, and half of it is going to family violence response, and we know that only 18 to 25% of family violence is ever reported to police. So if you want to know the real figure, sort of take those police statistics and multiply them by four, and you'll get a real sense of the scale of this issue. In New South Wales, there was a study the other day saying that 10% of young men, 18 to 34, have had contact with police around family violence.
That's huge.
Huge.
So the National Plan to End Violence, so one thing that I think you've pointed out is there's a lot of resources going into, you've said to me before, the justice system, policing, incarceration.
Yes.
So that's a lot of money going into that, lot of the budget. And also I know that the theory behind the plan has been challenged. Should we be putting all our eggs in the basket of changing societal attitudes towards women?
Yes. So, look, I think the plan represented best efforts of a lot of people at the time it was written.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of goodwill, a lot of hard work going into that plan. But in reality, the politicians will stand up and say, they're committed to ending family violence in a generation. They're just not saying which generation, because I don't think anyone really believes that the current plan does enough to actually end family violence. There's a lot in the response. There's a lot of responding to family violence, which is really important, but there's not a focus on ending family violence. Ending family violence for a particular woman in a particular situation, yes, but really addressing the scale and the magnitude of family violence in this country, there isn't the focus there.
I've heard people arguing it in a different way. I think Jess Hill in a quarterly essay saying that changing societal attitudes to women is important, but we shouldn't put all our eggs in that basket. We need to look at there's a lot of services that could be helping, like alcohol, drugs, even Aboriginal women are subject to a lot more family violence or intimate partner violence, as women with disabilities. So there's a lot of parts of the sector that are starved of funds. And it occurred to me, it's a little bit of if you had an oil spill on the highway, the first thing you'd do is you'd run out and you put sawdust on it or something to clear it up. Or you might, if it's a big spill, block the traffic, then you might try to find who's the truck that did it, who's spilling there. And then it might be some design fault and you might have to change legislation to change the design. So, but you wouldn't just change it, say, oh, we'll just focus on prevention in the long term. You'd also try to address what's immediately happening.
Yes. And look, I think Jess Hill's right about not putting all eggs in one basket. But we don't want to get distracted about eggs and baskets. We need a lot more eggs and we need a lot more baskets. The issues of family violence are multi-level, multi-tiered, and operate, you know, when we think, you know, and your program challenges us to think differently and ask the bigger questions. And when you look at how, you know, if you ask yourself the question, how do we as a society keep creating generation after generation of men who go on to use family violence? Like what is it in our systems and our structures, our communities, our families, our policies, our economy? What are all of those drivers that create systems that support, enable and encourage and allow family violence to continue? So there's no one answer to this. And it was great hearing the previous show, you know, talking about, you know, how urban design and architecture can create conditions that are conducive or disinducive to family violence. So
that's right. Amy was talking on Kill Your Lawn about the atomization, which I agree with. The atomization of our society means we're all boxed up in our little fence, little plots. No one's watching each other. No one's supporting each other. And during COVID, of course, family violence went up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot to learn while First Nations communities are often deeply plagued by family violence. They would say, you know, that's not necessarily gender drivers that drive that, although they are important, that there's a whole history of dispossession, colonisation and abuse and power and control over people. And we can also look at First Nations communities to look at how communities can support victim survivors to stay safe, but also how to hold perpetrators accountable and how to get around men who use violence. In a sort of modern suburban Western communities, perpetrators slip out of view. People who use violence slip out of view very, very quickly.
Oh, easily. They can hide behind four walls, four fences and four walls.
Yes.
And as you pointed out before, can not happen in public areas or in work life, and then can go back into the little domestic sphere.
So what we really need, getting back to the national plan, if I can.
I'll just remind listeners, you're listening to Think Again, 3CR 855 AM on your dial, 3CR digital and streaming at 3cr.org.au. I'm Jennifer Burrell, and today I had the great pleasure of having with me in the studio Philip Ripper from No to Violence, who's talking about prevention of family violence and also the national plan to end violence against women and children and how that's going and how we can end violence. Just a few small questions.
Yes. And I think on that, you know, on the national plan, I think this is a really important time. We have Tanya Plibersek back as the minister responsible. We have the incredible Jed Carney, might even be the local member for the studio we're sitting in at the moment. I'm not sure. Maybe we don't extend that far. But, you know, we have a couple of incredible people in leadership roles in government. They are very committed to this issue and they are going to work very hard to deliver a new national plan or a new action plan. And what we're really keen to do is to work with the government and really develop a plan that is for the nation. The current plan is really quite limited in the sense that the way it rolls out, it feels more like a departmental plan. You know,
it feels more like a departmental plan. And sorry to interrupt you, Philip, but I wanted to ask you, I'm going to quote you from you were quoted in the Saturday paper in an article on this topic, and this is what, And I'm going to the topic of really needing to engage the wisdom and the knowledge of the sector, which you've just started talking about. So what you said is, you mightn't like being quoted, but I'm going to do it, Philip. We are constantly frustrated by the revolving door of consultants who are lining their pockets with taxpayer funds, taking the time and expertise of usually unfunded charities and organisations and diverting them from their important work, only to repackage it up and present it to government and move on and then rinse and repeat. And I think in that article you've also talked about the demotion by consultants of an advisory group, which I think No to Violence was part of.
Yes, the National Plan Advisory Group was ostensibly to advise the Department of Social Services about implementation of the National Plan, and that advisory group was disbanded earlier this year. I am really pleased to hear that the minister is establishing a new advisory council directly to her. So that will be really interesting.
It will have some little teeth, maybe?
Well, hopefully it will, you know, provide sort of direct access to the minister. I hope my invitation's in the mail, but maybe not.
Look in your junk mail.
No, but look, we're really calling on the government to really lift the ambition of the next action plan, really to make a genuine national plan, a plan that brings the states and territories together, a plan that brings in the expertise and wisdom of the sector. For too long, you know, I think the skills and experience, the insights, the knowledge of our frontline staff, of our organisations that are working at the policy and research cutting edge, you know, have been held at bay by bureaucracy. And we need a different attitude and we need a different approach, one that says we're not going to solve family violence just by government programs. Governments are really, really important, but government programs aren't going to solve family violence in this country.
Well, they actually do violence in, if you watch parliamentary proceedings. You actually are watching a bit of abuse.
Oh, geez. Yes, there's more PhDs to be done in gender and power dynamics across Parliament, but there's
but
a lot.
On.
Yes, a lot to be done. But yes, what we really need is a national plan that is a genuine national plan where people come together on a shared and common agenda and work together. You know, that does require political leadership to create the environment for that, but it requires new policy architecture, one that you know, really does centre the experience and wisdom of the sector. Like I said, my quote, I'm more than happy to be quoted on that one. That is our weekly experience. I think this week at No to Violence, we've probably had three requests from consultants to contribute to their projects. They'll take the money, they'll bank it, and they'll move on, and they'll take our time for nothing.
And sorry, you know the type of evaluation which I always advocate for, it's called developmental evaluation. And we've talked about on this program, and what it means is you get a committee, you get people with the knowledge and the expertise and skin in the game who really care, and you get them as an advisory group, because our world is complex. You don't make a plan and just run it for the next 10 years without looking at how it's going. You have this group of experts and advisors and, you know, people with lived experience, and you have a group of those who you consult with and you say, look, how are we going now? What can we be doing differently? Is this working? You know, we don't want another plan that you just set a some I've forgotten what you call it, one of those little carts, just send it down the hill and yes. say, oh, let's just let that keep running and we'll check again in 10 years. That's stupid.
Yes,
we need you. We need No to Violence and other members of the sector like you.
Yes, and we need genuine partnership, not that sort of consultation that you get from government where they come and tell you what they're doing and call it consultation. We call that non-sultation at work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, for that contribution.
Add that. Yeah, you know, we need genuine partnership because it is the organisations that have been doing this work for many, many generations and are driven by their expertise and their knowledge that really can contribute solutions and are part of solving the problem.
Yes, and too soon, as usual, we're coming close to the end of the program. So I know you've already started talking about this, but I wanted to ask you in about 1 minute, what needs to happen to stop violence against women and children? And you've touched on some ideas, and we need that involvement of the knowledge and wisdom of the sector. Yes. But do you want to highlight a few factors that you come to mind?
Oh, look, again, we could talk all day, but there are all those all the systems and structures that enable and support and grow and foster the next generation of people using violence. We're not tackling systemically. Mm. There are programs, there are initiatives, there are ideas. There's lots of things we know can work, but they're not operating at scale and they're not being delivered in a coordinated, systematic manner. So there is lots of things that we know work, but we are not sufficiently aligned and operating at the scale that we need to. But ultimately, men need to stop using family violence and
not just being told it, not just say, hey, mate, you shouldn't be saying that.
No.
Not going to work in most cases.
Yeah, exactly.
Not for the harder cases.
No. So there's I think Auntie Muriel at Bamblett said at a meeting the other day, and I'll probably mess up the quote, but everyone has a part to play and everyone must play their part. And I think... It's very simple, but every individual, every family, every community, every workplace, every government department, every government program has a role to play in ending family violence in this country.
And schools.
Yes.
Yeah. So what can listeners do?
Well, get active. Keep raising the issue of family violence with your politicians, and with policymakers. Politicians have sort of got memories of like goldfish, they forget things very quickly, and particularly the big and difficult issues like family violence can slip off the political agenda pretty quickly. But we know the scale of this issue, the lives being impacted of women and children and men, using family violence actually isn't great for men either in terms of their outcomes and their mental health.
It doesn't come from a place of happiness.
No. So, no one is really benefiting from family violence. So the scale of the problem is huge. It impacts so many people. But as we were talking about before, families are so often atomised out in the suburbs, it's a crisis that's happening behind closed doors, but it is happening in your street and it is happening in your neighbourhood.
What a thought. And so, listeners, just keep your politicians aware that this is a matter that cares for you and that they should give it their full attention.
Absolutely.
So thanks so much for joining us on the program today, Philip Ripper, and thanks for leading great ongoing work of No to Violence. It's been really interesting, and we'll definitely love to have you back because I know you can talk all day, so we might have to have about 12 programs or 16 programs to cover all you
That's
have to
right.
say.
Well, we have 16 days of activism coming up, so we could be on a promise there.
All right, we'll put that link on our program page. When does that start?
Don't tell me that. I should know that. But okay, soon. 16, we're all just,
they can Google it.
16 days of activism.
16 days of activism, Google it. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Think Again live on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to contact us or give us feedback, please email Borderlands at borders@borderlands.org.au. Our programs are available on a variety of platforms and on the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. To end our program today, please enjoy Milkumana by King Stingray. We'll be right back.
you've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.